swinging strike three. He struck out. A really impressive bottom of the eighth inning for right-hander Colby White.
You know, you hear kids talk about these guys that play at this stage and stuff, and every kid wants to, and that's kind of molded me into being able to succeed at this level. Spencer said, "Colby, you just got drafted in the sixth round." And I thought he was joking. Then I started thinking about, you know, how hard I've worked just to get here and just to be able to pitch here. And then thinking about that, I started crying a little bit. Just when I get in, I know I got three outs to get. It's me versus whoever steps in the box. They're going to catch hell for three outs.
Hey guys, Colby here. As my journey continues, people tell me as I battle on the mound, it's really a game that's purely mental. But I understand that the physical well-being is equally important. Mike and Christy Johnson of our title sponsor, the clinic at Farmers Med Shop, in my hometown of Foxworth, Mississippi, echo the same sentiment. When you're looking for the answer for all your health needs, call or stop by and let Mike and his wonderful staff help you be the best you can be.
All right, everybody, glad to have y'all back today to another episode of Brushing Them Back with Colby White. This is William, and I've got Colby on the line from somewhere in the Neverland. Colby, you out there, brother?
I'm out here. I am coming from Punta Gorda, Florida.
Punta Gorda. I apologize for him saying that. We didn't check to see if that was a word we could use. It sounds like a foul word to me, but we'll go with it anyway, so...
That's it.
All right, so this month's episode, we're working on quite a few guests for the show over the next few months because we're in the middle of baseball season and everything's chaotic and you got college and pros and everything else going. Schedules kind of got overlapped and we just were having issues trying to get a guest lined up to get in for this month, although we've got plenty lined up for the upcoming months. So Colby and I sat down, we thought about what would be the best thing to do. Well, here's what we thought we'd do. We'd update you guys on kind of where we are, where the show's at, where Kobe's at, his progress, guys that he played ball with, guys that he were drafted with, because you know they keep up with each other. They're following each other's stat lines. So we're going to do that on this episode today. So, Colby, first and foremost, let's don't talk about you first. Even though you're the superstar, let's don't talk about you first. Let's talk about, first of all, a quick update, if you know anything, on a couple of the guys that you played with previously that have already been featured on this show, Mr. Nightingale, and then, of course, Luis Trevino. Have you touched base with either one of those guys here in the last few weeks?
So actually talked to both of those week to week at least, and both of them are actually in the independent ball ranks now, so kind of had a step back from the affiliated ball for various different reasons, and they both got opportunities in independent ball, which is a great opportunity for a lot of guys, and they're working their way back into affiliated ball now. So just kind of waiting day to day to see, you know, who will pick them up or kind of how that journey continues. But certainly two hardworking guys that have a lot of baseball left to play.
Okay, just a quick clarification for some listeners we got that maybe aren't diehard baseball fans and have no idea what he's talking about, the independent league. What would be an example? For example, we talked to the Abbeys last month. Now, what is the team that they have? What are they considered?
They are they're probably considered a semi-pro league. This is a professional league where you sign away your amateur rights, meaning you can make money off of your name. Basically, you get paid to play, and then any kind of image, likeness kind of stuff, they can sell your baseball cards, this, that, and other, and make on. The only difference is with independent ball is it's independently owned outside of the Major League Baseball ranks, so it's not affiliated with the Braves, the Yankees, Red Sox, that kind of thing. So, and basically scouts go to these games and look for the next free agent signs. So, I think I saw the other day that, maybe Kumar Rocker is in independent ball ranks right now because of how his, draft stuff goes. So, I mean, there's certainly a lot of talent in those leagues and also, It's pretty cool, a little scene that they have going on.
Hey, just a quick side question off of the independent league stuff. You had another guy you played with at Mississippi State, a Lee Belt, Jared Lee Belt. Is he currently in an independent league? Did I see that on Facebook or somewhere?
You did. Yeah, he's in I actually think he's very close proximity to his house.
Yeah, he's from Wisconsin. Yeah.
But yeah, I saw he got back-to-back saves in the first two games they played.
Yeah.
The season started a little late, I guess because of the weather and all that, but yeah, he's saddled up and he's playing, man, toeing the rubber. It's awesome. Hopefully I'll better follow him and keep up with him during this time too.
Yeah, I watched him pretty closely when he was at Mississippi State. The big redheaded kid from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's talk about some of the guys that I know you stayed close to because you played college ball with them. How about any of your PRC guys you played with? Any noteworthy PRC movement, you know, from a professional standpoint?
From a professional standpoint, not from the professional ranks, but something I think is kind of noteworthy is Shamar Page. He was at La Tech. He was a Pearl River alumni. I played his freshman year and my sophomore year. We're both at the River, and he went to Grambling. Actually threw a no-hitter this year. It might have been a perfect game. I might be botching that, but one of 20-something. I don't know the exact number, but a very impressive feat. And then he's a second-team All-American. So that in itself is unreal. Just had a really good year and you know, getting another degree kind of thing. So pretty awesome for him. Something that every kid dreams about having is an All-American plaque sitting in your house. So he'll have one of those and feel like that's a pretty awesome thing. You know, he's a very good human being with a very good story. So maybe we'll get him on the show one day. I think it'd be a good one to hear.
That sounds fantastic. And, of course, you know, we also, you and I, we both know before it's all said and done, we're going to have an episode that deals with the transfer portal because that's a big deal, especially. It's big in football, but it's getting just as big in baseball. So you know we're going to tackle the transfer portal issue on a future episode. So he would be a definite, what we would consider a solid reference for such like that. So,
mm-hmm.
All right, your Mississippi State guys. You played with a few guys that what I would not consider scrubs. I would say they're above average. And a few of them got their opportunities. Some are at the minor league level. And one in particular, might I add, that you prophesied was going to make it to the pros faster than any of y'all, actually happened. So why don't you give some quick updates on some of those guys?
Okay, so Ethan is the one you were talking about making the show. And I think everybody that's played with Ethan, especially on the 2019 team, what we saw on a first-hand basis every day, I mean, it was remarkable to say the least, but just so much confidence, so much knowledge of pitching and how he's attacking guys and unreal stuff as well. But I remember saying to a guy in the dugout in the SEC tournament when we were playing against Vanderbilt, I basically said, this is a big league pitcher we're seeing pitch right here.
Yeah.
Because everything was so good. I mean, just spotting stuff up, both sides of the plate, throwing 3-4 pitches for strikes. I mean, it was just – and then just unwavering. Never seemed like any moment was just too big for him. And that you know, and obviously a lot of guys have that, but you have the stuff he has, and then you have that. It's like, man, that's – and then all of a sudden the numbers are just unreal to say for the sales. But yeah, that –
the folks now. Now, before you jump from Ethan, let's clarify something for folks that live under a rock and don't follow SEC baseball and stuff like that. As Ethan Small, one of your former teammates, he was the SEC Pitcher of the Year his final year in baseball. And you said 13 months ago, almost to the day that we're having this conversation right now, I actually had a conversation with you on another podcast that I have called World of Wally, and when I interviewed you, I asked you the question, which one of these guys that you're playing with right now would be the first guy to make it in the bigs? Before I could put a question mark on it, you gave me the answer, Ethan Small, and you, sir, hit the nail on the head. You, sir, should maybe go to Vegas because you got a real prophetic mind there. I don't know what's going on with it, so.
Come on now.
All right, so Ethan's small, but Ethan is not the only premium talent that is rocketing his way through to the professional ranks. Give us a couple of updates on some other guys you played with that are doing quite well.
So Cole Gordon obviously was rolling, doing very well. Gets a call up to AAA, and I just noticed he had got put on a 7-day injury list. Hopefully it's nothing. Haven't talked to him personally. Hopefully it's nothing serious, I assume, because it's a 7-day. It's nothing. Maybe just strain something or tweak something.
Soreness in the elbow or something, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's obviously he's on, you know, we talk about the curveball and pitchability and the poise he has. I mean, he's right there. So hopefully he'll get off the injured list and get his call. Really good human being. Love watching him compete. And he's probably got the highest spin rate curveball in the minor leagues. It's pretty elite. And actually on the same team as him, which all the Mississippi State fans know this, Jake Mangum got called up as well and is tearing the cover off the baseball as usual. So I think I saw his first three games. He had 8 or 9 hits. So, but yeah, he's where the Mets are right now. I mean, you got a former Mississippi State alum as your manager at the big league level.
Right.
And then Jake Mangum, a Bulldog, Cole Gordon, a Bulldog, which unfortunately they just traded away JT Ginn months prior.
Right.
For the Mets org. But I mean, you got two Bulldogs in AAA and a Bulldog manager at the big league level, and both of them are doing well in the minors. So it's like, might get interesting. Hopefully Jake, before the end of the year, gets the call. I wouldn't be shocked, especially with where he is in his contract, as far as like Rule 5 draft stuff coming up and his age and all that. And I would think that he's more than ready.
Well, Kobe, you know, I don't know if you and I actually talked about this directly. I know I cry about it a lot. I've noticed that the New York Mets and the Milwaukee Brewers, for some reason, love Mississippi State baseball players. I don't know what it is. You know, me being a Cubs fan, I had to cry about all the state guys going to Milwaukee and battling against my Cubbies. So I go through a lot of grief during the regular baseball season. I actually told Hunter Renfroe, he happened to be at a game earlier during the lockout at the beginning of the season, college season. He was in a game in attendance watching Preston Johnson pitch. And I told him, I said, man, I'm glad to hear you're in Milwaukee. I said, but it breaks my heart that you're another Bulldog going up against my Cubbies. He said, yeah. He said, I'd love to hit in Wrigley. I said, that's what I'm afraid of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and speaking on that, it's like, like I've noticed that too. And it's like that with other colleges and professional teams and all that. You'll start seeing they draft tendencies.
Yeah.
You know, and for whatever reason, the Mets and the Brewers have a lot of Mississippi State guys, and it's a pretty cool thing because it's a whole lot easier when you start checking the box scores of minor league games and stuff. You got two on the same team or three on the same team. You're not searching around all over the place. So, but yeah, obviously the Mets and the Brewers have seen stuff they like, so I think that's pretty cool. Another thing I was thinking about is just Mississippi guys, the White Sox. A few guys from Mississippi were on the White Sox. Garrett Crochet, Tim Anderson, Crochet, Ocean Springs guy.
Yep.
Tim Anderson went to East Central. Lance Lynn, he had pitched at Ole Miss.
Yeah, still, Lance Lynn pitched at Ole Miss quite a while ago. He is an established pitcher in the MLB at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just three different fastballs and still dominating with it.
Yeah,
which,
crazy.
I ain't going to toot him up too much because he's a rebel.
But. Right. We can't talk about him too good. You're right. You're right. All right, so besides Mangum, there's two or three other guys that pop into my mind that played with you that they're rolling pretty good in the minor league levels at this time.
Oh yeah. See, unfortunately, another guy who I really enjoy watching pitch and a really good friend, good friend, good teammate, Tristan Barlow. He just got off Tommy John, which was unfortunate, and then came back and found out he had to have thoracic outlets. So. Which normally thoracic outlet is a quicker turnaround, but sometimes it's a higher risk. And obviously keep him in your prayers about his career and coming back and all that. But he's a big time competitor, man. It was always cool seeing him come in the ball games and throwing them hammer sliders in there. And obviously a big power fastball too, but
right.
Not sure what his timeline will be, but I assume he's out for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I follow him on social media, man. That's you could see the anguish, and he actually didn't post it. I believe his mother actually posted it and just tagged him in it, and you could just hear the anguish in her words as she was trying to describe how hard he'd worked to get where he was, and you know. But it's just a setback. That's how every baseball player should look at it. It's just a stop on the road. It's not a roadblock unless you allow it to be a roadblock.
Exactly. Yeah, and how long Tommy John is, I couldn't imagine going through that and then, you know, having that relief, like, okay, I'm able to be an athlete again. I'm going to get that feeling that you get when you go out and compete in front of 10,000 people again, and then all of a sudden, boom, something else has got to get fixed. But he's a warrior. He'll be back better than ever, and I'm excited to see it happen.
Hey, I got a quick question to ask you. During your high school days, did you actually face Kirk McCarty, the kid from Oak Grove?
I did not. Yeah, he was a little bit older than me.
Just checking, because him and Connor Pilkington were right around the same class, weren't they?
Yeah, so Pilk was between my graduating class and Kirk McCarty's.
Yeah, you were at PRC, I think, when Pilkington was pitching at Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Yeah, your old Pilk got his call up the other day. You talking about a kid that has battled. I watched that kid back in high school, and I told him when I watched him pitch, I said he might not ever pitch but two or three games in the pros, but that kid right there is going to make it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. He's a grinder. I remember seeing him pitch at State, man. It was like he would never give up at-bats.
Right.
Never. And that's what's so cool to watch about different guys is, like, no matter what situation. And obviously, I mean, I looked the other day and I didn't notice this at State. You know, I would see him throw, you know, some mid-90s fastballs at State, but it seemed like he was around 90, 93 most of the time.
Yeah.
The other day he came in the ball game and it was a bunch of 96, 97s.
And yeah, he's picked up velocity for sure. And I don't know if it's – I have got to assume it's because of the system that they were bringing him through in the minors, you know, the pitching coaches that were working with him.
Exactly.
So let's talk about one of your guys. I mean, y'all are close. Tanner Allen. What's Tanner Allen up to these days?
Man, he's in Beloit. I don't even know what state it is, but it's a high league, and actually in the same league Bowling Green is with Tampa Bay. Been keeping up with him. I guess he's transitioning well. It seems I've been talking to him today. Seems like his being away from home doesn't really get to him, so
yeah.
I look for him to fly through the ranks. He's one of the best fastball hitters I've ever seen, probably the best one I've ever faced. So,
well, I mean, he did teach you how to be a superstar, so he ought to be able to handle the pressure.
Come on now, didn't teach me nothing. Like that,
you crazy.
I gotta pick that one up. No, he knows the superstar status, though, man, because that's like last year, everybody knew Tanner Allen. He was the face of college baseball. So it was pretty cool to see somebody you joked around with a year or two before. But he was obviously big time then, don't get me wrong. But he went from a national level of having 60,000 followers on Instagram. So it's kind of crazy to see that stuff unfold.
Well, you know, SEC player of the year, stuff like that will do it for you, say.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so you got...
They're comparing to Chipper Jones, so...
You got in it? Whoa, slow down now. Slimmer down.
You gotta check. They'll check Twitter.
Hey,
you'll see it on there.
I got a quick question for you. We got... You happen to be a pretty good buddy with... pretty good friend with a guy that's got a pro connection right now. Happens to be related to him. Some old scrub they got playing in Atlanta that you claim is going to be the home run and the batting title champ this year with the Braves, Austin Riley. He's got a cousin that you played ball with, that you stay in touch with. I've actually lost – I was tracking him on social media, and I've kind of lost track of him. What's he – first of all, Keegan James is his name, for those of you that don't know who I'm talking about. What is he – and I know he's having some – he was having some arm issues the last time – I knew anything about him.
Yeah, he was, I talked to him, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. It might have been longer, but he was on the back end of his rehab. I think he was starting to get a few touch and feels off the mound, just low effort,
mm-hmm.
pitches off the mound. And but yeah, he had Tommy John after he got into pro ball. I believe it was his second. Let's see. It had been early in the year last year, but hopefully he'll get to pitch some this year.
Right.
Which obviously he's a starter, and they'll be managed innings and all that. Right. But yeah, I mean, big time fastball. Really good person. Spins the ball well. So, you know, and the thing is, him in Colorado, it's going to be kind of interesting to see how his development goes and where they send him and all that. So, but yeah, hopefully he gets back healthy and doing well. Really talented bloodline there, man.
Yeah.
Also, Riley, him and his little brother. So.
You know, the funny thing is, and you know, you and I talked about this. Keegan and Cameron James, who's at Mississippi State right now, plays third base for them. Their father, Greg, I shared this story with you. I might as well share it with our listeners. Their father, Greg, was having a conversation with me at Starkville earlier this year. And he said, you know, it's my wife's fault. And I said, it's your wife's fault for what, Greg? It's my wife's fault that these boys didn't go straight to the pros. And they had to go through college, you know, ball first. And I said, really? He goes, yeah. And that's when he explained the story to me about how Austin Riley is his nephew. That's his sister's son. And I said, really? I said, he said, see what I'm saying? That's that James bloodline. I said, my wife's bloodline kind of screwed us up a little bit, slowed us down on development. So I'm going to have to remember now. When you decide to have kids and your kids are coming up and they're making their runs, if they had to go college first and they don't get, you know, drafted like Andrew Jones is going to fix and get, or Drew Jones, whatever his name is, Andrew Jones's kids fix and get drafted, you know, number one overall. I said, I'm going to have to figure out, was it your bloodline or was it your future wife's bloodline that slowed that development down? So
I hope any bloodline affiliated with me can send one of my youngest to an SEC school, man. That's the thing. It's so rare, and not even just SEC, but you know as well as anybody, just a college athlete, man, getting your school paid for playing ball.
I know it don't get no better than that, does it?
Yeah.
Hey, the only way it gets better than that is actually getting to go out and play a kid's game for 10 or 15 years and then pay you to do it. Just saying.
That'd be something, wouldn't it?
All right, that's so. Crazy. Before we jump into what you got going on, because that's the reason I use Keegan to kind of segue in, I want you to go ahead. I know you're about to die to do it. Go ahead and give a little shine to your former JUCO baseball team, the Pearl River Fighting Wildcats, and tell the world what they just accomplished.
So, for the first time in program history, the Wildcats have won the Junior College World Series for Division II. So they bring the national championship back home to Poplarville, which anybody that played there for Coach Avalon could tell you that, hey, this was going to happen. We actually believed it our first year amongst all the injuries we had and lack of experience we had, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, Coach Avalon, the thing about him and that program is he doesn't leave anything unsaid. He doesn't leave any question or any doubt anywhere. I'm sure still to this day, even with the caliber of recruits that they get, that he's still pushing those guys to the extreme. And that's why that they was able to handle and manage the workload throughout the year that they were and finish this off. It's awesome. And the thing is about Coach Avalon, he's one of the best human beings you ever meet. And there's always a why with him. So very, very excited that they were able to pull this off, and it's well learned. It's pretty cool that it's within an hour drive of my hometown to be able to go down there and hang out with them. And I actually go down there, and he's always welcomed me back. Go down there and train during off seasons and stuff. So yeah, just unbelievable program, unbelievable coaching staff, along with his assistants, very good assistants. But yeah, it's exciting, man. Something like that is a special thing, obviously. But first time in program history, and they've got a good history there, so that speaks volumes.
I'm assuming that most of the guys on that team won't have any trouble finding a future home either at the college level or the professional level.
I would say that's a strong possibility that happens. That they'll. I mean, there's two of them, three of them now, I believe, that I just know of, and I'm sure it's going to go up even more as time passes. But that'll be pitching or playing in the SEC next year. And then four or five of them are going to be going to South Alabama, just loaded with, I think they had nine early signees. So that speaks volumes of guys you'll be seeing on television next year on ESPN playing every day. And they'll excel. You know, they've got guys in college ranks right now at those levels excelling. So very exciting.
All right, man. I wanted to give you a moment to let you put your shine out there. You know what? You got a chance to brag on Mississippi State for winning a, you know, that's one of your former teams. They won a natty. Now your JUCO team won a natty. I mean, the next time I guess I'll talk to you, we'll be talking about, hey, after you made it and y'all playing in the World Series, that kind of stuff. Crazy stuff, so.
That's it, man.
Anyway,
that's it. I hope so.
So I finished up with Keegan as part of the former friends and family, you know, kind of updates on everybody kind of deal for a reason. Because Keegan is on the back half of his rehab. You said, you know, they're already letting him do a little soft toss and stuff. So why don't you get everybody caught up on exactly what's going on with you right now? I mean, they know you're not pitching. They know you're injured. They know you had surgery. Just you know, first of all, you had UCL surgery. The UCL was not the actual damaged part. It was an actual bone issue was the initial issue, right?
Yeah, I had an epicondyle avulsion. Old Jared Parker had it. It was one of the first ones years ago with the AIDS.
Okay. So it actually was
in young kids, so it was kind of weird that it happened to me. My UCL was still intact. It had seen significant damage. It was stretched. So they said it was probably about 40% of it torn. So I'd still been throwing on it. And, you know, it was hurting a pretty good bit. But it wasn't – that was the crazy thing about it. You know, for any kids listening to this, hopefully they'll learn. It was kind of a subtle thing. It had hurt for a while, but it was subtle. And then all of a sudden it was hurting pretty rough. And I just thought I had some inflammation or something like that in there. And then – they end up telling me, oh, well, your elbow's guarding. It won't let it straighten out and stuff. We had an MRI and then got an MRI and then 4 days later had surgery. So, but yeah, epicondyle avulsion, a bone basically broke off of the elbow where the UCL is connected to, and then the bone was just floating around with the UCL connected to it. So couldn't keep throwing like that, and it was a blessing that I was able to get the surgery as quick as I did because it sped up my clock on when I can get back and pitch. So, I'm 2 months post-op. I got it on April 4th. I guess a little after 2 months, roughly 2 months. I'll start throwing again in September. So from now until then, 6 days a week, I'm doing, manual rehab, doing a bunch of arm care, a bunch of strengthening exercises for my shoulder, my scaps, and then obviously the little muscles that need to help protect everything while I throw. So, and a lot of straightening stuff. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. The biggest thing I feel like with this, and Keegan was able to share a bunch of advice saying to stay busy doing stuff. Don't let the mind get, don't let the mind get wandering, sitting around and missing competing. Cause obviously it's baseball season. I'm going to a field every day that I would be getting stretched out for a game at 11, 12 every day and go through a full practice, BP and all that. Now I'm inside and air conditioning, doing table pushes for 3 hours. So, but that's all part of the process, and I'll definitely take this stuff into consideration when days I get sore and just throw through it. Because as a competitor, you never want to quit throwing, but then when you get sidelined for 12 to 14 months, you'll start thinking, hey, I can take 3 weeks off here and it'd be a lot better than, you know, a year or so. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I'll start playing light catch in September, and then hopefully I'll get some time home. But if not, it is what it is. But yeah, just very optimistic. I feel like that's the way to look at it, you know. And it's a very common thing, but I think it can also be avoided. You know, people say, oh, well, it's not about if, it's when. Well, I mean, to an extent, you know, the way people manage pitching and players don't give up the ball plays a role in it, I feel like. So,
and for all of our listeners out there, this man, he's not back in Marion County, Mississippi doing all this. This guy's so dedicated, he refused to leave the facility. He said, I'm staying here till I'm right.
That's it. It's a hard thing to do, man. You get to want to be home, especially when you ain't got anything to occupy your time, but that's You know, there's always this saying, you'll see it in a lot of locker rooms and stuff. So you say you want to be a baseball player, and it'll have a bunch of periods, dot, dot, dot. And, you know, the things that aren't seen when the guy signed these $100 million contracts or even a $1 million contract is the time that they're sacrificing a lot of stuff and missing a lot of stuff, you know, like these guys that have kids and stuff like that. And I couldn't even imagine that, which is one reason why I hadn't started a family or anything like that. But there's a lot of sacrifices that people have to go through to just get that chance, you know. And for me, this is the hardest thing, and I'm very thankful that God has given me this adversity, because it's going to teach me a lesson one day on stuff. But just one of those things you have to do, you know. So it is what it is.
It is what it is. That's one thing I've been trying to tell Kobe. These are not roadblocks unless you make them roadblocks. These are just stops on the path.
That's it.
All right, so September. We talking about September, light tossing, and all that kind of stuff. If everything stays on track, we're looking at, what, about spring training the next year when they really turn you loose?
Yeah, so that'll be roughly a year. But normally what they do is the guys that have Tommy John, they manage their innings during the year next year, and they don't want to have to manage my innings for various different reasons that have been unsaid. But so I'm looking at probably June, the 1st of June, I'm full go, no pitch restrictions, no managed innings. I'm a regular guy. I'm back pitching normal. So I'll stay at the complex a little later than spring training. I'm obviously would want to go out earlier, but just for precautionary reasons, they want to make sure everything's going to be fine and I'm able to go out there 100%. So I'm looking forward to that day.
Well, here's a question that the listeners probably have, and I'm curious about it myself, and you might not know the answer to this at this point, but like when they turn you loose again and they say it's time to go, where does that start? I mean, will you pitch at spring training and then they'll figure out your assignment at that point?
Oh, I'm sure I will throw I'm sure I'll throw some competitive innings in spring training, but I'm not sure that I will be throwing three times a week or four times a week. I'm sure I might throw one inning a week against live hitters, and then so it'll be very tailored down to where they're not going to want me throwing very often, so everything can rest and heal up, and just not taking any chance of anything re-aggravating or re-tearing. But if I had to guess, now I haven't been told that, and they kind of play it by ear and play it individual based, you know. And obviously they have a plan and they have a schedule, tentative schedule. But if something comes up one day I'm sore or whatever, you know, it'll throw me off. But I will be throwing, from what I've gathered from the head trainer here, I will be throwing in against batters in spring training now. Obviously, I'm assuming I will have to go to my assignment in Durham when I get back. I don't think I'll have any chance of you know, competing for a big league spot in spring training or anything like that, or might be in Durham the whole year. You know, there's a bunch of different outcomes and things, but it'll be tailored, but June, I'll get back to being able to throw three, four times a week like a normal late inning reliever.
Okay, so it's each case is player specific. Depends on how you feel. It's a whole touchy feely kind of deal. You know, hey, you feeling okay? I feel fine. Yeah, I understand. So you said something about Durham. So you wouldn't be forced to go like back down to like Double A. They're probably gonna bring you right back to Triple A and let you throw at the Triple A level, right?
Well, typically what they do is the first couple outings, unless they're in spring training, they'll have you throw older guys or Triple A, Double A guys. They'll have them throw in the rookie leagues for, I guess, just to not try to get too exerted and try to be a more calm stage, not a high, high intent, high effort game, you know, and try to make sure everything goes smoothly a couple times before they send you, because Durham has a big fan base and the crowds, you know, the crowds are big and they're loud and adrenaline to start going, and they don't want adrenaline to start going and then something be wrong and you get hurt again. They want you to pitch a couple times and everything be good. And then I guess it's kind of like working on a vehicle. You know, something tears up on it. You don't take it 100 miles. You know, you take it right down the road and, oh, so everything sounds good. Let's check this, check this. And that's kind of, I guess that's kind of how they're going to look at it too.
Right. Well, Kobe, man, I'm glad we had a chance to sit down and talk a few minutes to get caught up on everything. I mean, me and you talk probably more regularly than, except for your parents, you probably talk to them pretty regular, but you and I get a chance to talk pretty regular. But a lot of our listeners, you know, don't get a chance to hear a lot from you since you're in Florida and you're working so hard trying to get back. So, of course, we appreciate you taking this time for sure. For the listeners, we are working on a couple episodes coming up in the next few months. We're going to talk about some issues like how the media either influences or affects the sport of baseball. Got a special guest we're going to be bringing in for that. Got one of Kobe's old pitching coaches. We're going to bring him in, and we're going to talk about the brutality of recruiting and the arms race, because if you don't have the pitching staff, you do not win baseballs. So we're going to be talking about that for sure. That's a couple episodes here in the near future we're going to be talking about, so you guys definitely want to tune in for that. Kobe, you got any words of wisdom for the youngsters that are listening right now about how they need to conduct themselves daily, especially if they're in the middle of a baseball season? Because what we're getting into a situation now in this time of the year where it's all-stars and select teams and that dreaded travel ball. So what's some advice you're going to give the youngsters that are listening about arm care and about just general, you know, baseball in general, about how they need to try to take care of themselves?
Well, for me, I heard a quote from a guy, and I've heard guys say this in the past, and it really stuck with me during this little break. It said, basically, to dress for the job you want and not for the job you have, and act as if you have that job. So for the kids that want to be professional baseball players or want to be college baseball players, you know, it's probably to your advantage to do the things they do. Like if you're 11 years old and you know, you threw for 10 months out of the year, and you see big leaguers shut off from throwing, which most do, 90% do, I would recommend taking 2 months off and letting your arm heal, because at 11 and 12 years old, you're not getting recruited to play college baseball. And I understand you have to develop and you got to further the game, but sometimes sharpening the knife a little bit before you go to cutting again is better. So hit the weight room. If you're a kid like me that was real skinny and lacked strength, make sure you eat and hit the weight room and add another skill, you know. And a lot of times add another skill can be just working on sprint speed, working on arm strength from not throwing. A lot of kids think, oh, well, the more I throw, the more velocity I get. Not necessarily. The more you throw could cause more damage to your arm, and then the slower you could throw or you could get hurt. But yeah, an arm care thing on that is, I think, shutting down and have proper ramp-up times. So if you shut off for 2 months, which Dr. James Andrews recommends, and he's the leading Tommy John surgeon in the world, shut down for 2 months. I've done it. My dad was real big on it growing up, and I'm very thankful he done that for me, because it got me to this point very healthy. And then obviously last year I was only able to shut down for a month, but it is what it is. But shut down for 2 months, and then when you start throwing again, make it a crawl and then a walk. Don't go to sprinting. First day you throw back, don't go to throwing balls hard. You know, throw 2 or 3 times a week, minimum effort. And then after, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, 6 weeks, then you can start ramping it up. And it's just a smart thing. And a lot of the young kids don't think about that. They just see a bat and a baseball and a glove and, hey, let's go play catch. Let's go do that. And they love the game. And that's a beautiful thing to be able to get out there and do that. But you also got to be smart. You know, hey, I don't need to be out here throwing a baseball as hard as I can when I hadn't picked up a ball in a month. So that's a big thing. And then some people believe you shouldn't shut down. Me personally, after reading all the research done on it, I believe it is a known fact that, hey, you need to shut it down. And that would be how I would approach it. And then during the off season, those times you shut down, work on the things you don't do well. Like if somebody tells you as a 11-year-old kid, 15-year-old kid, whatever, hey, you need to add some lower body strength, or hey, you need to lose some weight, or hey, you need to gain some weight. That's when you have plenty of time to put everything else to the side and work on that. And it's very beneficial, because, you know, the high school season ends, and then you play during the summer. And some kids play All-Stars, but that'll just take 1 month out of it. And then obviously fall, if you're below high school, junior high level, don't play a ton of fall ball. Go play basketball. Go play football. Go do whatever to try to stay healthy and to stay in shape, you know. And that's my personal opinions on it. But if I was to do it again, or if I have the blessing to have a kid and he plays baseball, that's how I'd want to handle it. So.
And one thing I'd like to add, although he added quite a bit of wisdom in that, what he just said, hey, this is for that random 9-year-old travel ball coaching staff. Not one kid on your team, no matter how hard he plays or how poorly he performs, is going to win or lose a scholarship to college or sign a professional contract because of that effort. So lay off the kids when they're that age. They need to be out there playing ball, having fun. You're gonna know very quickly as a kid, you know, as they get older, if they're gonna be that kid that's got the potential to be that player. So don't be pushing an 8 or a 9-year-old like they're gonna be a pro in 2 or 3 years. That's insanity.
Exactly. Because the thing I started realizing when I was growing up is no matter how good you are, no matter how much your parents, your grandparents, your brother, or anybody wants you to be, at the end of the day, it comes down to you at 9 o'clock at night. What are you doing on a weeknight? Are you in bed getting sleep? Are you working out? Are you doing whatever? Are you pulling the tires in the right direction? Because nobody can make you do it. So if a kid's going to be good, he's going to be good. No coach, no parent at 10 years old is going to be able to make a kid be good at that. This is an everyday game. It's a lifestyle. It really is. So. Exactly what you just said hits the nail on the head.
Hey, one thing Kobe just said that everybody needs to hear again is he was talking about taking time off, resting your body, especially if you're a pitcher, rest your arm. Get in that weight room, work other parts of your body, make yourself one single solid unit. Because I got news for you. Kobe will attest to this, especially if you're going to try to be a pitcher. Pitching comes from the feet up, not the arm down.
Exactly.
Oh, and also, remember this. This is his catchphrase, and it will be coming to merch very soon, so you guys be on the lookout for it. Mass equals gas. Hashtag brushing them back.
That's it.
That's right. That's it. All right, Kobe. Brother, love catching up with you. I know you got stuff to do. You probably going to be sitting there watching a ball game today, critiquing the poor pitcher out there that's thrown 58 pitches and he's struggling every inning. All he's trying to do is keep the season alive. Remember that, man. Don't be so hard on him.
Come on, now.
All right. Guys, that's all we got today. We will be talking to you guys next month, so you guys be on the lookout for next month's episode. And, Kobe, it's been a blast, brother. I guess we'll talk at you later.
Sounds good, man. I enjoyed it. Thanks for the time.
All right, man. All right, for all our listeners, that's it. We'll see you next month, guys.
Now a word from our sponsors.
Honesty, integrity, and hard work. These are characteristics that drive me on my journey. The same can be said for Hunter Forbes and his crew. So call or contact Forbes & Son Wood Products, LLC, in Sandy Hook, Mississippi, for all your timber harvesting needs.